This is the Ian Rappaport Stereo Podcast, coming live and direct from the Gloom Tomb. The beat that you're listening to, that's called that, that's that Hash Browns.
Yes.
That shit right there, Miles, let that rock under me. That shit right there is a fucking banger. That's what you call a smacker. See, when I heard that beat, that moody beat, that the 2015-2016 podcast co-host of the year sent me, I said to myself, if I could rhyme, I would get on that and I would rock for 3 minutes. I can't.
Yes.
But when
that's,
I hear
that's
it,
that's what it's made for.
When I hear it, I'm kicking flows. Like, I'm not making sense, but I'm like, like, I'm on it. That's that shit. That's that funk. That's that dirty mouth, like, smell like you shit your pants beat. Miles, let that rock. Let that rock underneath me for a little bit, because that shit had me hyped. The beats that you've been sending, G, are bananas. They're bangers, and they're funky. See, now, a couple of people were a little bit offended by our review of my favorite MC's most recent album. Now, I could say Jay-Z is my favorite MC. I could say he's the greatest of all time. And I could also say I probably won't listen to that album in its entirety all the way through. He'll be doing a new tour. I guarantee you he won't be doing many songs off that new record because they don't have the same je ne sais quoi as the majority of his past work, and they're not funky. So when you are selling out the Garden, selling out Giant Stadium, and you're selling out stadiums and arenas all over the country, people want to come and hear that shit. No disrespect to Jay-Z. Love him. Respect the shit out of him. Couldn't say enough about him. But the new album, it's not funky. It's not funky. So when you hear a beat like that, Miles, turn it up again. Yeah, there it is. There it is. See, let that rock. Let that rock for 15 seconds. See. Yeah, see. That's that shit right there. That is that shit. And I'm not going to name names, but I sent it to a few legitimate MCs. Maybe they'll spit on it. Maybe they won't. I can't. But, like, that's the type of shit, if the late, great Sean Price was alive, I sent it to him.
Yeah, he'd get on that.
He'd get on it, and he'd get on it quick because rhyming came easy to the great Sean Price.
Yes, with an album dropping soon.
August 4th, Imperious Rex. Video dropping August 4th, too. Tremendous body of work, even posthumously, because the man loved to rhyme.
Absolutely. You can hear it. A craftsman.
Shout out to Sean Price. New record dropping August 4th. And shout out to G Monetti for making that fire.
Yes.
I really appreciate it. And you could hear all our beats. You could hear all the shit talking this Saturday night in Dallas. I'm going to tell you something right now. It's going to be a shit talking extravaganza in Dallas. It's at the Texas Theater. Okay, joining me and G Monetti, Kenyon Martin, Steven Jackson, Gary Payton, former Dallas Maverick NBA champion, Deshaun Stevenson, Rashard Lewis, Brian Scalabrine, Jimmy Jackson, and more to confirm, okay? That's a fucking show. Me, G Moody, Kmart, Detrillis, Steven Jackson, Gary Payton, Rashard Lewis, Deshaun Stevenson, Brian Scalabrine, Jimmy Jackson, and more. So when I say and more, I'm not just, do I ever false advertise? I don't do it. I don't false advertise. So when I tell you and more, the big three is in town. The next day, I'm going to be on the sidelines for the big three, as I always am. Because they're calling me the Howard Cosell, the big three. So I'm inviting the entire big three. I'm not naming names of who else is going to show up during this podcast, but just know that you might get your fucking mind blown. There's a few seats still available. IamRapaportTour.com. IamRapaportTour.com. Trust me, it's not a big venue. It's going to sell out soon, so get them now. Dallas, Texas, the Texas Theater, this coming Saturday, July 29th. The show starts at 8 p.m. Doors open at 7. You're going to get your fucking head blown off. Not literally, figuratively, at this show. It's going to be a fucking barn-burning, shit-talking extravaganza. Me and G. Moody are staying afterwards to take pictures, meet and greet. We do it for free. We do it for the love of the game.
That's right.
So on this podcast today, we're also going to have the official, unofficial political correspondent, Eli Lake, breaking down the first 6 months of Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. Junior's all fucked up in the game. Junior's all fucked up.
Yeah, he don't know what the fuck's going on.
Junior and his big fucking teeth.
Yeah, he looks like shit.
He looks like shit. You look like Ed Wood, Duke. You look like Mr. fucking Ed. Donald Trump Jr. needs to get that gum replacement surgery. His gums, his gum to tooth ratio is all fucked up. Like your gums shouldn't be longer than your teeth, Duke.
Yeah.
You understand? You need to get that gum replacement surgery, my man. Cause when you smile, if I'm seeing the upper level of your gums, that's not dope.
Yeah.
Like, fix your fucking grill. Fix your front. Yeah. Fix your entire furniture.
Yeah. You're on a world stage, man. Fix your shit.
So we're going to talk to Eli. But the thing that I wanted to get into now, Monetti, and we haven't really talked about this, is LeBron James. Now, last week, it was funny because I mentioned that the Conor McGregor tweet about him stealing black athlete style, essentially, I said that that was my biggest tweet ever. And listen, if you listen to the Iron Rapaport Stereo podcast, you're going to get some insight and information about myself and G. Monetti that we're not going to share in the Twitterverse. I assume that anybody who listens to this show gets that even in my darkest ranting social media Instagram video, you have to understand that it's tongue-in-cheek, right? I'm assuming that because people were so fucking upset, so bent out of shape, so personally offended by this rant. Here, Miles, play just the audio of my latest 59-second onslaught. I really stuffed them good on this one. For the people. Yeah, they play that, Miles.
Good for you, Kyrie. Good for you. You deserve to play in a city where you could get a decent bowl of sushi on a Tuesday night. I'm fucking proud of you. Good fucking move. And LeBron, you fucked up. You won the championship and you said, Cleveland, this is for you. But you should have been saying, Kyrie, this is for you. He fucking carried you last season, you fuck you. And now you got nothing, LeBron. You're going to be scratching your bald fucking head next season, trying to figure out how you wound up with Ty Lue as a coach and Jose Calderon as your backup point guard. You fuck. Boom, 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 boom. Hit the rolling star with the rolling on. Fuck you. You got no point guard. You got no GM. You don't have a fucking shirt. And that's what the fuck you get for creating the friends and family watered down AAUification of the NBA. Good.
That rant has been seen by over 5 million people. And 98% of them all get it. They all agree, not agree, but they understand that I'm not totally serious. Now, I'm just saying that to the listeners of the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. Obviously, my disgust and frustration with LeBron is well documented. I think he's fucked up the NBA. Needless to say, that doesn't mean I don't respect the shit out of him as a player and a philanthropist. He does a lot of good, but I feel like he has done a lot of bad to the long-term situation in the NBA. I've gotten DM'd by men. I've gotten tweeted at fuck you, Rappaport. LeBron would kick your ass.
Oh, that was me. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, G. So many DMs from guys. You know, when someone slides up in the DMs, you know, that takes an effort. And when a dude slides up in my DM to tell me that I'm a hating culture vulture, or old fuck, and this, that, and the other, and saying all these really nasty, mean things, they crush my soul, G.
They get personal.
They get personal because they think that what I'm saying to LeBron James is personal, and it is, you fuck. You little groupie fuck all up in my DMs. You wear leotards, and you're in my DMs, and your name is Matt, or Jeff, or Doug, or this, that, and the other thing. You think LeBron James gives a fuck about you? They're like defending his honor, and a lot of these people are from Ohio.
Right.
Now, I started this fucking dethronement party when I showed up with that fucking broom. And now everybody's piling on this fuck. And I say, good, you motherfucker, you. Kyrie, he's had enough. He's had enough. He said he wants to be traded. Apparently, Kyrie Irving said it in confidence. He said it quietly. He said it to the team. And then somehow or another, it got out. Apparently, allegedly, this was leaked by the LeBron James camp. And then all hell has ensued. So now everybody knows that Kyrie Irving has said publicly he wants to be traded. He said he's had enough. Oh, that's just me paraphrasing. And then it was reported by Stephen A. Smith that LeBron James said that if Kyrie Irving was in front of him, he would, quote-unquote, whoop his ass or, quote-unquote, kick his ass. And to this I say, oh, LeBron, you've never stepped to anybody on the court your entire career. The only person I've ever seen LeBron talk shit to on the court is the measly 185-pound, 6'3", Steph Curry. When the goons step to you, you don't say anything. You did nothing. Now, I know you're a basketball player. You're not a tough guy. Neither am I. I'm not a tough guy, and I'm not a basketball player. And then LeBron went to Twitter again. He's like fucking Gwyneth Paltrow. And he said this is fake news. What Stephen A. Smith is reporting is bullshit. And then the iconic great Stephen A. Smith went on a 16-minute rant basically saying what I said was told to me by people in the LeBron James camp, and he backed it up. He said, I'm not detracting what I said. LeBron James can say whatever he wants to say. I was told that by people in the LeBron James camp, which is really a fuckboy move. You have your people tell Stephen A. Smith that if Kyrie Irving, all 6'2", 192 pounds of Kyrie Irving was in front of you, you'd like to kick his ass. So you like to kick point guards' asses, huh? Is that what you like to do? You like to bully up on the little fellas, huh? Is that what you like to do? And they like to bully up on you. Shout out to Delonte West. He was a great point guard. I have a brand new theory of why all this is happening, Gerald. And I really want to hear your opinion. It's called the theory of Charles. All these young players in the NBA, all of them, they've grown up watching the games, and they watch TNT. On TNT, the great Charles Barkley, shit-talking extraordinaire, sometimes is smart, sometimes isn't, fucking sounds like he's nuts, but he always talks shit. When it comes to basketball, when he's up there with Shaq or Chris Webber, Kenny, and whoever else, whenever they want to shut Charles Barkley up, they'll always say to him, you ain't got no rings. You don't have shit, Charles. Shut up. Let the champions do the talking. Let the guys with the jewelry do the talking. And even the great shit-talking Charles Barkley, like, it's always just like, to this day, almost 20 years since his retirement, nothing. You don't hear a peep from him. Right. He has no response. And I want to say this. These fucking kids, all of them, they all don't want to be Charles Barkley. They all don't want to be the person who doesn't have the ring. They all don't want to be the person who, you know, at the drop of a dime could be told to shut up because your career is essentially invaluable without a ring. Of course, a ring is important. But there's problem, aside from LeBron James, who is, as much as I can't stand him, I'll never take away how great he is and how impactful he is of a player. I can't think of anybody in the NBA, maybe Russell Westbrook, maybe, and LeBron, who will even have a career close to Charles Barkley. Or Gary Payton, ringless. Allen Iverson, ringless. Karl Malone. There's nobody even in Karl Malone's fucking stratosphere in the NBA right now. So,
right.
Just if you, because you don't have a ring, doesn't mean you should suck your way onto somebody else's team to win one. You can go down swinging and have great dignity, be Hall of Famer, and be an iconic one-of-a-kind. Fuck this Giannis, Greek Freak, and Porzingis, the unicorns. Talk about a fucking unicorn. Charles Barkley is a fucking unicorn of a player.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he wanted a ring. Of course Gary Payton wanted a ring. You think that there's anybody in the NBA right now who will mean as much when it's all said and done as Allen Iverson? Ringless. Karl Malone, ringless. The list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
That is the fucking theory of Charles. Stop fucking ring chasing. Jump in ship. I've covered Kevin Durant. I'm not going to go backwards. I've covered him on this podcast as thoroughly as anybody on any major network. Okay. I've had my ups and downs with him. Everything goes back to LeBron James. He wanted out of Cleveland. Okay. Delonte West was skeeting. They weren't going to win a championship. The rest is history. Kevin Durant followed the LeBron James AAU skinny genification playbook, big three manual to winning a championship, and he did it to a T. And now they're going to run the fucking rack, barring injury. They're going to run the fucking rack like Larry Bird did in the NBA All-Star three-point shooting contest. They're going to run the fucking rack.
No.
Houston ain't winning with Chris Paul. Dribbles the fucking ball too much. Oklahoma City is going to run themselves into the ground. The great Russell Westbrook. Love him. Love Paul George. Love his hairline. Love him. Love his fucking hairline. Paul George has got one of the best fucking hairlines in all of sports history. All of public figure history. That fucking hairline is mean. That fucking hairline is it's thick. It's straight and it's low. Some might say it's too low. But when your shit goes way back, you'll be wishing you had a little miniature forehead like Paul George and you had a thick, strong, overgrown hairline. When it's all said and done, you're fucking balding and shaving your fucking head. You're going to wish you could look like fucking Paul George.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, good, Kyrie. Be on your fucking merry way. I say, good. He's had enough. You should live in a city where you could get a nice fucking New York strip steak any day of the week. You should live in a city where you should get some fucking ramen noodles 3 a.m. No disrespect to the people of Cleveland. Hardworking city. Doesn't get more American than Cleveland. He's had enough. I want to say this before you jump in there, G, because I know you're going to say, oh, well, LeBron, he knows very well that LeBron makes the game easy. He knows very well about the greatness of LeBron. He knows very well he's had enough. Please take the floor before my larynx splits in half.
What Kyrie is doing is what we call, he's smelling his piss now. Now you want to leave because you think you could be the man on somebody else's team and you want to be the big fish. But when you had the stage to be the big fish, you couldn't get to the fucking playoff. Then this guy comes. This is the top five player in the history of the game.
Yes.
So, of course, he's making the game much easier for everybody on the floor with him. This is a top five player. So, it's easy. You win a championship. Before him, you didn't get to the fucking playoff. You get to the championship, you win, you play a big part, and now you're not a good teammate. Now it's like, oh, I got to break out. Listen, man, the grass ain't going to be greener because you're not going to play with the caliber of LeBron James. And you probably won't be in the playoffs again. So why don't you just be a good fucking teammate and try to get back to the championship to win?
Whoa, 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 whoa. All of a sudden, Mr. LeBron James is a good teammate. How soon we forget that he left the fucking heartbroken fans of Cleveland. How soon we forget that after his little run in Miami and D-Wade was a breaking down, he left Miami. This is all LeBron James' fault. No. You fuck you. He did it all. He put this shit in everybody's head. It's his fucking fault.
He's winning. Wherever he goes, mission accomplished. Wherever he goes, mission. He went back to Cleveland, won a championship for them motherfuckers, went to Miami, won for them. Wherever he goes, they win. Let's see what this little shit does when he goes.
Well, maybe he's had enough.
Team is gonna,
maybe
not, he's
had
not
enough.
Iverson. He's not Isaiah Thomas.
He could be John Wall. He could be Isaiah Thomas on the Celtics. He could be Steph Curry. He could be Tony Parker. Maybe he doesn't want to be around it anymore. Maybe there's more to it than meets the eye.
Nah. I think you're playing with a top five. You're playing with a top five player. You shut the fuck up and you do the job and you try to win multiple championships. And when that player retires or leaves, now then it's your time to take the mantle. But you, he want to break out just like your boy Kevin Durant. They want to break the fuck out.
You're skipping the whole important part that LeBron James started this. I've said enough. I'm not going to say any more about this fucking guy. Do you have any more to say about the fact that Kyrie Irving has decided to leave Cleveland? He wants to be traded. That doesn't mean he's going to be traded, but they have signed Derrick Rose.
Yeah, we got D Rose. It's all good.
Now it's we. Fucking sicko. It's still we, huh? It's we.
If he goes to the Knicks.
If he goes to the Knicks, it will single-handedly be a fix for right now. Him and Porzingis would be a great duo to start a franchise around. Whether or not Jeff Hornacek, fucking Steve Mills, and the GM will do the right thing, I don't know. But if he made it to New York, the way he plays, he's a big shot maker. Come on, man. Don't front on Kyrie. The crowd will be excited, and I will no longer be considering boycotting the first game at Madison Square Garden. Because low-key, between you and me, G, I have the playbook in motion to do something fantastic.
All right.
I'm planning on boycotting the first game at Madison Square Garden if nothing is done, and simultaneously finally do our loaf walk. Okay?
Yeah, we got to do that.
So we'll do a loaf walk and a boycott if nothing changes the first night at the Garden going into the 2017-2018 season. I want to tell you about this fucking watch I got, G. Okay?
Oh.
I got a watch. It's gorgeous. I've been wearing a white-faced, silver-trim Vincero Collective watch. I'm getting complimented on this fucking thing daily. At Vincero, a luxury watch doesn't have to cost a fortune. Here's the secret. Most brands, they're marking up their watches 6 to 12 times before it gets to you. Guess who's eating the cost? You are, my friend. Vincero's years of manufacturing experience allows them to create innovative and luxurious timepieces and deliver them to you for a ridiculously fair price. I've been wearing my watch. People love it. The ladies love it. A watch like this can easily retail for more than $500. At Vincero, you can score one for a little more than $100. They have more than 3,000 five-star reviews, free shipping, and a 24-month warranty. Seriously, you got to check them out. You want to have a good time? You got to have a good watch with full-grain leather bands, with full-grain Italian leather bands and genuine Italian marble. You're not going to believe they start at just over $100. So whether you're heading to an important meeting, coming out to the big three, going on a date, going on a run, Vincero has the versatility you need to receive 15% off your very own watch. Go to VinceroCollective.com/Rappaport. The promo code is butter. Build your legacy today at VinceroCollective.com. You want to have a good time? You got to have a good watch. Go to VinceroCollective.com.
Mal, cue that sick fuck of the week music.
This award is earned, not given. It's called the sick fuck of the week. This guy's really sick. Lock him up.
How could you do it?
Don't let him out.
Damn. You fucked the dog?
You what?
You fucked the dog? Why would you fuck the dog? Why would you fuck your girlfriend's dog?
What sick fuck?
The sick fuck of the week. It's earned.
Earned.
Not given. You did.
What?
No.
No.
No. No.
Yes, this is the sick fuck of the week segment. The award-winning sick fuck of the week segment. This is an award that is earned, not given. Earned, not given. I appreciate all of the potential sick fucks that we're getting on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. I even got a few on there, and Facebook. G Monetti, yes, take the lead on this.
I call this "Let It Burn."
Yes.
After shelling out $1 million to settle with a woman who claimed he infected her with herpes.
Shit.
Usher is now slapped with a $20 million lawsuit by another shorty who says he gave her the herpes virus and she found out this past Saturday. So the sick fuck of the week is Usher for not disclosing he has herpes and still hitting chicks raw. And the lawyer for the new shorty is none other than Crooked Lisa.
Crooked Lisa Bloom.
Lisa Bloom.
You fuck you. She's also going after Draymond Green, and she, whenever she takes on a case, she tweets about it. That's who you have representing you.
She tries her cases on Twitter.
Yeah. Yes. Very valid sick fuck. Apparently they are saying that Usher's iconic hit song, You Got It Bad, was inspired by first contracting herpes. I hope it's not true. I don't like to make fun of these things. I still might be taking to the legal route on suing those fucks down in Miami who tried to accuse me of having herpes. I don't. I never burned.
Right.
I never had. I had gonorrhea once in 1986. I found out during the basketball practice at Martin Luther King High School. I was on a layup line and I felt like I pissed my pants. I was burning, son. Word. I don't have herpes. That fuck boy over there at Lebatard tried to say that. This person is trying to sue Usher for $40 million. I figure I could sue for maybe $20 million for accusing me. Non-factually, not true that I have herpes.
Yeah.
I don't. I never did. That little sore that I had, I don't have to explain it to my people. My people.
Word.
Our people at the I Am Rapport Stereo Podcast. Just know
that's right.
That the defamation suit is not dead, you fuck you. Because if I come into that money because of those fucks tried to slander my good name, G Monetti.
I see, man.
Yeah. Try to slander the good name of the Gringo Mandingo, you fuck you.
Word. Don't ever try to front on us, man.
You try to front on me? No. No. I fuck you in the ass. Yeah, and when you walk away unscathed, but a new man, you'll know that I don't have herpes. You fuck you.
Yeah.
You a lot of things you'll take away from that Wonder Bread bag treatment. But one thing you're not going to be taking away is herpes. You fuck you.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. So I might catch a raw dog without a bag. Yes, you might limp. But you won't be dripping when I'm finished with you. You fuck you. You know, we talk a lot about you know, police and what they've done wrong. And we, you know, I think it's important to really think about some of the things that the police officers deal with on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, there's no room, there's no excuse for killing unarmed civilians. It happens, it's real, but that's not what this is about. Imagine if you're a police officer. You know, a police officer, they're not Superman. This is not the movies. They're just guys trying to help. It's not like you're, it's a money-making thing. In California, San Francisco, the police officers tried to serve an arrest warrant on a guy. Bizarre, potentially hazardous situation. They arrested this guy, locked him up in the back of the car, put him in the back of the patrol car. The guy was, you know, they had an arrest warrant out for him. While he was in the back of the patrol car, this is in San Francisco, Richmond, California. The suspect somehow or another got his cuffs off, undressed, tossed his clothes onto the freeway, and started shitting in the back seat, started eating his own shit,
no,
and then spit it at the officers. Now, just imagine, I'm sure everybody listening has friends that are in law enforcement, cousins, uncles, family members, friends. Imagine that's your day at work. Like, imagine that is what you go to work and have happen to you. Like, we all complain about a bad day of work. Imagine you go to work, you're risking your life to get a guy who already has an arrest warrant. You arrest this cocksucker. You get him in the back of the car. Somehow he gets out of his cuffs, which is scary in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of jumping out of the car like a normal person who's trying to flee, he throws his clothes out, starts shitting, starts eating his shit, and then starts spitting it at you. I don't understand, like, what kind of sicko. That's a real sick fuck.
Yeah, yeah, that guy needs to be in a cage.
Now, we talked about other cases like this. There is a Muay Thai boxer in Thailand.
Right.
You spent a lot of time in Thailand, G.
Yeah, Bangkok's a great city, man. Good food, good people.
Yeah, anything goes over there.
Yeah. Like 42.
Yeah, it's fucking nuts out there. But there is a transsexual Muay Thai boxer who used to be a guy, now it's a girl. They call them girly boys. They, that's not an insult over there. They're happy to be called girly boys. Or what do they call them? What do they call them?
Lady boys. A toy.
Lady boys. Sorry. We don't fact check anything. And she is fighting women. And I say, lock her up. Her name is Nong Rose Ban. She fights women, beats the shit out of them all the time while wearing lipstick.
That's it, man. That's how they're going to get their belts now. You know, they're going to be men in the women's division kicking ass. And, yo, I'm 100-0. I never lost.
No.
You're a god fighting woman. Of course.
Don't let her fight anymore. She's going to just kill somebody.
Yeah.
The final sick fuck of the week is a guy named Mike Lado, L-A-D-O. This happened in Florida. This guy stabbed his girlfriend's dog because the dog was siding with his girlfriend, a boxer Labrador mix. This is probably a beautiful dog. Probably a rescue. Obviously a mutt. The best dogs. The dog's name was Blue. Cute dog. The dog was siding with the girlfriend during their arguments. So this cocksucker, this sick fuck, stabbed the dog to death.
Mm.
You animal, you.
Damn.
But think about the rationale. Think about the rationale that, oh, the dog is siding with her, so I'm going to kill the dog. As if the dog is like some person in the middle of this lover's quarrel. Now, I don't know what kind of charges you could be put on for that, but Michael Lado of Florida, you are a real true blue sick fuck.
Man, White girl syndrome rears its ugly head.
Yes, what happened?
New York Times writer Greg Howard writes in ridiculous essay called Was That Racist? Huh. Where he complains in this essay that white women don't make space for him when walking down the street. Somebody get this guy a white girl before he kills himself.
Now, what is this fucking lunatic saying?
He says he's complaining that white women don't make space for him when walking down the street. He's mad that they don't acknowledge him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, somebody get this guy a white girl, everything will be fine.
All yeah, right, get him a white girl. You wrote an article about that? You want them to feel sorry for you? They don't give a fuck. Maybe your breath smells. Maybe it has nothing to do with that you're a black man and they're a white girl. Maybe. Can we get a picture of him? Does he look like a fucking dog? Does he look like shit?
Yeah, he looks like shit.
Yeah, you look like fucking shit.
Yeah, that's why.
Last week we talked about Beyonce's wax figure.
Yeah.
They gave her a little tan, the wax figure, and now everything I think is hunky-dory. The hair is still the same. The blonde weave is still the same, but the wax figure got a little makeover. They put it in a tanning booth, and the wax figure is up at Madame Tussauds, wax museum.
Oh, they caved in.
Yeah, they caved. I personally think that the first figure was fantastic, and I don't see anything wrong with it. Listen. Yeah. Saturday, July 29th, the show starts at 8 p.m. The Texas Theater, the same place where they nabbed Lee Harvey Oswald, me, G. Moody, Kenyon Martin, Steven Jackson, Gary Payton, Rashard Lewis, Deshaun Stevenson, Brian Scalabrine, Jimmy Jackson, and more. And fucking more. There's going to be a whole lot of shit talking. IamRapaportTour.com. There are a few tickets left. IamRapaportTour.com. Everybody knows I'm about that fantasy football life. If you are too, you can join me, G. Monetti, August 20th at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. We're creating the world's first and biggest live duress mock draft championship course. Hashtag duress mock draft. This is the official kickoff to the fantasy football season. As my gift to you, there'll be a full day of fantasy fun and a live podcast with me, G. Monetti, Matthew fucking Berry, Trey Wingo, Jim Brewer, and the fucking Gronk, Rob Gronkowski. All of us live, Gillette Stadium. For tickets, go to dancewiththedingo.com. That's dancewiththedingo.com. Use my promo code DINGO and get $15 off. Restrictions may apply. Promo ends August 19th, 2017. See website for further details. All right. I'm on the phone with Eli Lake, the official, unofficial political correspondent of the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. Eli, the people have been asking, where's Eli? What's up with Eli? Here he is. If you never listened to the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast before with an Eli Lake segment, again, he is the official, unofficial political correspondent of the I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. He works at Bloomberg News. He was infamously tweeted. He was name-checked in a tweet by Donald Trump. And so on and so forth and so on and so forth. Eli, my question is this. It's been 6 months and about a week since Donald Trump has taken office. I want you to give a completely objective, non-snowflake diagnosis of what's gone on in the first 6 months based on your opinion. Be as objective, be as hard-nosed as you possibly can. I am not a fucking snowflake. I do have two snowballs. If anybody wants to check to see if I got any snowballs, I got them hanging low. So the question is, Eli, the first 6 months, what the fuck has happened? The good, the bad, the totally objective. Give me your first 6 month diagnosis.
The president is dangerously incompetent. Politically speaking, I've never seen a president this weak before in terms of just having what could be lethal political threats to his presidency, namely a special counsel at the Justice Department. He's openly feuding with his attorney general, who was the senator, the only senator who took him seriously in 2015. No one else would really fuck with him, except for Jeff Sessions, who was the first, who made it legitimate to get behind Trump. You could barely think of a more important political ally to the president than the attorney general. And he's openly, like, acting like, man, I feel like it was a huge mistake putting him in charge of the Justice Department, which is kind of the latest crazy, but that's become, we're all becoming inured to it. But he's, but the good news is that if you thought Trump was a fascist, he's making it very easy to all of his opposition. I mean, he's been completely inefficient. And the only thing he's done is he's put a conservative guy on the Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch. But other than that, zero, like very little. Like he named an aircraft carrier and, you know, he did a couple airstrikes in Syria. But, I mean, that's, those are the plus marks on an otherwise, like, sort of disastrous 6 months.
Now, what would you say to the people that'll say, oh, well, the stock market is up? Because I was going to get my fucking stockbroker to come on here and explain that that is not attributed to Donald Trump. The stock market being up is not attributed to just Donald Trump right now.
Well, there is, I think, one element of it, but it's not necessarily a good thing. So first of all, the stock market's great, but there's many ways to judge the health of the country.
Right.
You could look at the unemployment rate. You could look at, you know, some environmental thing. You could look at the state of, like, you know, race relations, or there's any number of things, but I digress. But there is an element of it where people who are in big businesses look at two things that the Trump administration has promised they will do, and they will do politically because there's a Republican Congress, and that's deregulation, meaning there'll be fewer checks on big industries, whether it's how they treat their workers, environmental issues, but also taxes. So people will be paying less, you know, in some way, and it gets very complicated, but that's the expectation. But there's another, I mean, but you're right, as a general rule, the market is going to do what the market does, and I'm not an economist, but that is one element to it. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing.
Right.
And if he keeps acting crazy, people, that will also be reflected in the stock market. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
That, it's like it's a fluid issue.
Now, what about the people, the staunch Republicans, the staunch Trump supporters? Like, try to dig as deep as you possibly can. What are we missing that Trump is doing well? Is there anything that you're being biased on, that I'm being biased on, that anti-Trump people are not giving him credit that he truly deserves?
Well, from my perspective, there are things in foreign policy, because he's not continuing things that Obama was doing that I disagreed with, that are better than Obama. But he hasn't, I mean, he has continued to verify the Iran nuclear agreement, the compliance of the Iranians.
Which means what?
Well, the big thing that Obama did in his time as president, in terms of foreign policy, in terms of domestic, it was Obamacare. He was a great president, I think, at moments like Trayvon and Charleston shooting, in terms of race and trying to bring us together as a people. And then on foreign policy, there's something called the Iran nuclear deal, which is a complicated issue. But in short, it says for the next, at the time, 10 to 15 years, the Iranians are going to curtail their program and not stockpile a lot of low-enriched uranium. And in exchange, a lot of sanctions would be lifted. A lot of money was released that they had. And it was a complicated deal that Republicans and also a lot of hawkish Democrats didn't like, because it was time limited and it didn't do anything about Iranian support for terrorism. So from the perspective of, like, Trump ran on the idea that this is the worst deal and we're going to get out of this deal. And a lot of Republicans wanted him to do that. And we're still in that deal. On the other hand, something like the Paris Accords, which is a big global climate sort of voluntary agreement that Obama signed. So there was no way that anyone could enforce it anyway. But he just said, we're not doing that. But it's less of a big deal because on environmental issues, we're at the point now where solar panels are much cheaper and there's lots more green energy that's much cheaper. And so, you know, it makes sense to invest in green energy, even if the government isn't telling you to do it. Anyway, I don't mean to digress. But even on these things, like, he had the power to do this stuff, but he stayed in the Iran agreement. He hasn't really renegotiated NAFTA like he promised. So there's a lot of big stuff that he said he would do that he hasn't done yet. And I mean, I don't know. Like, it's hard to come up with stuff, but it's mainly like he's just shooting himself in the foot. You feel me, Rap? Like,
yeah,
it's just
a lot of things
that he's doing that are making it harder on himself, and that's why we have the chaos.
Now, what about this big tooth fuck who's got more gum than teeth, Donald Trump Jr.? I'm trying to get a gum to tooth measurement from this guy. So far on the internet, I can't find a proper gum to tooth ratio measurement on Junior. What about his situation?
This is what I think is going on. Donald Trump Jr. is an amateur, much like his father, Donald Trump Sr.
Right.
They really are not political pros. So when the Azerbaijani-connected rock promoter Rob Goldstone, who's one of the most bizarre people in this, writes an email that says, "Yo, I was talking to your boys, and they told me about how Russ was going to help your dad win the election." He did not know to, like call the lawyer. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Now, that also proves that Don Jr. is lying his ass off. Not even a month later on CNN, where he's like, "I don't know what the hell this Russia stuff is," because he obviously got that email. I'm not like trying to make an excuse about it, but I still am having a hard time believing that Trump and like the people who are at the top of the inner circle, who really don't have any experience in any of this in Washington right now, are making mistakes left and right, are like savvy enough to like on the down low deal with the Russians. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Were benefited by the Russians, and I think there's probably some unsavory financial ties. I don't necessarily even know where that's going to go, but don't, like, lose the plot. The issue is, this wouldn't even have been an issue at all if he didn't fire Comey the way he did. Just to go back to, like, one example. And now he's saying he wished he didn't have the Attorney General. We've never seen anything like this. The president is basically saying, "I don't know if I'm going to fire my Attorney General. I'm just going to let him twist in the wind," like with a reality show. Like, it's just, I don't know, I know we're 6 months in, I don't want to get too crazy, I don't think there's going to be an impeachment, but this kind of thing is not sustainable.
In your opinion, I know you can't predict the future.
Yeah.
Jared Kushner, this fucking guy, who looks like he's got a ping pong ball stuffed up his ass, Trump Jr., Trump himself, are one of these fucking guys going to get thrown in the hooscow? Are we going to see one of these fucking guys get kicked out, thrown around? And then my follow-up question is that bloated fuck, what's his name? Steve Bannon. What's his story? So the question is, number one, Jared Kushner and his ping pong ball, Trump Jr. or Trump, are they ever going to get locked the fuck up? And Steve Bannon, have you ever seen him walking around Washington, and does he look as bad in real life as he does in photos? And it's a two-part question.
All right, answer the second part first. I think I met Bannon a few years ago, and, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't want to get into, like, name-calling on someone's appearance or anything like that. But on the larger point of who, if someone going to jail, I think it's important for everyone to take a step back. Because the president is still the president.
Right.
And if there was a deal for him to leave power, I'm sure it would involve some sort of thing where people didn't go to jail. And we don't even know what it is, because it's still a long way away from, like, really proving hardcore criminality. What you've proven now is that there are liars and idiots. If that makes sense, that was, like, that's really what the Don Jr. thing is all about.
Right.
It's like, you got this stuff. And it seems, I mean, according to everybody in the meeting, they didn't actually deliver the goods on Hillary. But just that it even got that far, and we need to find out, like, well, what did Rob Goldstone mean when he said that there was this Russian effort to elect the president, right?
Right.
Because that's what the U.S. intelligence community said 7 months ago in their, like, you know, report to the public, that this is what was going on. So we need to, like, that's another important part of that. And how it involved Trump. I keep coming back to this. If he was really in an alliance or if he was working or coordinating with the Russians, and Trump would have known this, don't you think he would have sounded like John McCain on Russia. Why wouldn't, if you were really in cahoots with the Russians, you would sound like you were a hawk on Russia.
Right.
Because, you know, everybody runs for president, they're always much more militaristic than when they end up being the president. So that's the one part of it. And I just can't see Trump having it together, being savvy enough, being, let's, discreet enough to pull that off, right?
Well, I mean, that's one side of it, or that it's somebody, in my opinion, that he thought he could get away with it. And, you know, the way he, you know, hems and haws and laughs it up with Putin. And it's, you know, to me, it's like there's so many accusations. There's so much smoke. Something has to be up. This can't just all be fake news and CNN and fucking, you know.
No, it's not fake news. It's not fake news at all. But it's also like, that's the one, the side of it is that, you know what I'm saying? If he's really, if it's really as bad, if it's the worst case scenario, what I think we may find out is the people around Trump, like Roger Stone perhaps, and I don't like speculating about this, they may be in a serious amount of legal trouble if they were the connect between like WikiLeaks, the Russians, and
right.
the Trump campaign.
Right.
But like Trump, like he's, it seems like Trump says whatever is in his head at any given moment. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
And so if you're that kind of person, which is rare, you would be a terrible spy
I
or
got
asset
you.
For an intelligence service.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, so that, I mean, but I agree, like, it's, but it's not fake news. And when he says that it's fake news as a member of the mainstream media, it's like, enough already, dude. I don't feel like he's inciting violence against me as a journalist. I've had, you know, over the years, I've been in rough places at times, and I know what it's like to get pushed around a little bit. And that what happened to a friend of mine who was that Guardian reporter with this Republican candidate in Montana is disgraceful.
Right.
But I don't put that necessarily on Trump. I think Trump's just, you know, he likes to have this theatrical reality TV show thing, and one of the foils is the media. But that's the fake news, like when him, like his drama. The real news is like there's an investigation with the former head of the FBI that you can't do anything about, Trump. You know what I mean? Like it's going to happen.
And that investigation is still going, correct?
Yeah, and it's like if he tries to fire Mueller, who's the head of the special counsel doing this investigation, that would probably tip it into impeachment territory.
Right.
I mean, because that's just like, and you already, people are already starting to sort of, and this stuff with Sessions, like Sessions has friends in the Republican Party in the Senate. Like he is isolating himself politically in a way that I think is not sustainable. And that's why I dare say it. I don't know if he keeps going at this rate, will he finish the 4 years? I don't know.
There's no fucking way. They're just,
you're like, there's no way. You're just like, get some distance, man. I'm telling you, it's not happening. We all see it out here.
it just seems too intense. Now, I want to ask you about what's going on in Jerusalem. But before we get to Jerusalem, you went to Aspen for the security forum. First of all, what was it like being in Aspen? And do you have anything to report? Breaking news, anything specific that you could report, breaking news to the Ian Rappaport Stereo Podcast. What was the landscape of Aspen? And is it Aspen weed in Colorado is legal out there?
That's correct. Let me just tell you something. Aspen, Colorado is one of the nicest places, I think, in the world. It's like the most white 0.001% crowd you've ever seen. You know what? You've been there before, right?
Oh, yeah. They got a different kind of white folk out there.
I mean, but it's like, this is like the super duper rich come to Aspen.
Yeah.
Like, and you can tell because there's like, you know, like the stores are nice, the restaurants, everything is super excellent, including these weed stores because it's legal now. So they sell weed in Aspen, Colorado, like it's Banana Republic.
So how easy is it to get weed if you're from out of state? Is it fair game for anybody?
It's not an issue at all. And I wanted to like go back in time and tell people in the early 90s, like, you have no idea how easy it's going to be to get weed on vacation in 2017. You know what I mean? Because it's like, and I don't think younger people can appreciate it.
No.
Because marijuana is going to be completely legal, like, I think, you know, what, in the next 5 years across the country, right?
So was it like going into the Gap and needing a pair of socks on the run?
No, it's like this dude's like, oh, hey, welcome to the store. What kind of like, what kind of high do you want to be? It was like that kind of thing. It's like, this is crazy. Because I mean, like, I'm in my 40s, you know. I mean, we're like around the same age. If you wanted to, I'm going to say this is for younger, like, if you were like living on the East Coast and you wanted to get some weed, you were like lucky if it was dried out, like seeds and
right.
stems, and you had to wait on a dude for like 2.5 hours, and he might get around to get into you. He had to be in North Philly, and then like he's coming back around and just like hang tight. It was like you had to basically give up your evening to just maybe get some terrible weed.
Maybe
and
get
now
it.
In
maybe
2017,
get it.
Right. It's like you're buying a pair of, you know, like a cashmere hoodie. Like, you know, it's like that's what it's like.
So what was the security forum like in Aspen? Did anything interesting happen there? What was the takeaway from that?
Okay, so this is another thing. There is, I mean, so when you read on the internet, there's a deep state. That's not true. A deep state is like how the military really runs, like, calls the shots in Egypt, and there was like a coup in 2012, right? America has something called a national security state. And because we have, you know, depending on the year, but at the height of the war on terror, an $80 billion a year, just like intelligence. And that includes everything from satellites to human spies to sensors to cyber shit at the NSA. So $80 billion a year, an industry to, you know, basically eavesdrop, monitor, and learn about, you know, what other governments and entities are doing. And this is a, you know, and the security forum is a big kind of part of that and how it interacts with the media, people like me. And so every year they do this thing in Aspen. And I would say that this is, in this year, I've never heard as much contempt openly for President Trump. And you can tell that he's that this sort of, you know, call it the national security bureaucracy and the attendant kind of consultants and industries around it, they are, for the most part, like pretty terrified of Trump. And the government, the Trump administration officials who did come, there was almost like a sense of a little bit of conflict in the air when they were addressing the crowd. So it was very interesting, that crowd.
Now let me ask you this question. This is very specific.
Yeah.
If they had an arm wrestling match, do you think Bernie Sanders could beat Trump? Just off the cuff, just your personal opinion.
No.
You think that Trump would take down Bernie Sanders in an arm wrestling match? Just a simple question, yes or no?
Yeah, that's not a question.
I think that Bernie would fucking take him down.
Really?
I think he's got some old school dinosaur juice strength that's pent up, and I think he could do it. That's just my own opinion. But aside from that, in a more serious note, Jerusalem. What is going on in Jerusalem? You referred to it earlier as a powder keg. Your specialty is foreign affairs. Please explain to me where we are with Jerusalem.
All right. So you know, the IM Rappaport audience knows you and we're Ashkenazis. We're Jews. So I'm coming at this from a pro-Israel perspective.
As you should.
But that said, enough is enough, Palestinians. Enough is enough. This thing starts because these three, like, Arabs from inside of Israel decide to, like, shoot up the Temple Mount, and they're doing it from the compound of Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is this holy mosque at this site of this place where the Muslims believe that Muhammad ascended to heaven in a dream. So this place, which the Palestinians have been really sensitive about, especially since the 1967 war, when Israel won the West Bank and the rest of Jerusalem, that it would be defiled by these gunmen who were committing an act of terror. And they killed, by the way, two Israeli police officers who were Israeli Druze. They weren't even Jewish Israelis. So this is a horrible incident. And so what does Netanyahu do? And I'm not going to defend everything Netanyahu ever did, but I'm just talking about this one incident. He's like, we need cameras and metal detectors, and we need to investigate this incident that just happened because we're responsible for the safety of this site. And, like, And the Palestinians, they were like, call for a day of rage. There's been all these, you know, terrorist attacks, but also like demonstrations where they're, you know, Palestinians have been killed, you know, from overreaction from Israelis. So you're already seeing that cycle, and it's all about the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which makes it like all the Muslims are going to start caring. And so we have to make sure that the situation de-escalates, but it's like started by the Palestinian side, because the Israelis, they do not fuck with that Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Right.
They arrest people who try to, like, Jews who are crazy on the other side when that's happened, who plotted to, like, you know, burn it or do something to terrorists. They're very, very strict on that. And they let people, they don't even administer it. It's done by this thing called the Jordanian Walk, which was from the old regime, because they know how sensitive it is. And so for them to want to put metal detectors there, there's metal detectors at the mosque at Mecca, which is the most important mosque for the Muslims. You know what I'm saying? And to make that the issue, that, like, they're going to go in an intifada mode after you put up metal detectors, because there was a shooting. So the Israelis back down on the metal detectors, and we'll see what happens. So hopefully we won't go over the edge, because it's very, but I'm saying that this is the thing. It's like, at a certain point, enough is enough. If you really cared a lot about this, like, if, I'm not talking about Abbas now, I'm talking about Hamas, which are the more terrorist Palestinians who run Gaza.
Yep.
They praise the attackers as martyrs. So I'm like, if you guys care about Al-Aqsa Mosque, you can't praise gunmen who shoot people up in the, like, from the mosque.
Right.
And there were guns they were hiding in the mosque.
Jesus which
is,
Christ.
And that's the point, it's like the third holiest site in Islam. So there you go. That's my rant.
Eli, it's always good. It's always insightful. Got to keep the brain sharp. Got to know what's going on. Try to be as objective as possible. It's the official. Now, I get confused. Are you the official, unofficial political correspondent?
Yeah, the official, unofficial.
It's not unofficial, official, because then you'd be like sort of unofficial off the top. So it's the official, unofficial political correspondent of the Ian Rappaport Stereo Podcast.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Eli Lake, thanks for the call in. It's the Ian Rappaport Stereo Podcast. Banger ep. I'm done. Yo, let me get that... Miles, take us out with that Frankie Philadelphia. Do-do-do-do.